I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tale.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now.
Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Why, hello. Welcome back to the worst year ever. My name's Katie Stoll.
That's wild. My name isn't. I've got a different one, and it is Cody Johnston.
Today, we are recording without Robert because he needed the week off, like I needed it off last week, and that's just how we roll sometimes. Sophie's here, though. That's cool.
I never leave. Mm-hmm.
She doesn't. Yeah. Today, we have something special for you guys, and that is an interview with David Kim, who is running for California's 34th District. He is wonderful. We just had a very interesting conversation with him about UBI, about human-centered economy, and just challenging the establishment.
Backyards.
And I found it inspiring. I think I won't speak for you guys.
Hey, I don't disagree.
He doesn't disagree. That's different than our catchphrase on Even More News, which is
I don't disagree with you completely.
Completely.
It was great. It was a great conversation. And you're going to listen to it.
You're going to listen to it right
now.
So today we are very excited to be joined by David Kim, who is running for California's 34th Congressional District. Hi, David.
Hi, Katie. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, we're thrilled to have you. How are you doing? We'll start off with an easy one. Maybe that's not an easy question, actually.
That's a hard question,
that's
Katie.
Hard to diagram and dissect.
Yeah. No, I'm doing fine. I'm very grateful. Definitely very one of the few fortunate ones that get to work from home and then also campaign as well. So yeah, I'm very fortunate. And I think right now the focus is just to how do we help each other? How do we do this in the short term immediately right now, but then how do we do this long term where we're not outdoing our government in helping each other?
Yeah. I wanna hear a little bit about your background and, you know, how you decided to run for office. I'm also curious to know what campaigning is like right now. You know, we don't have the same traditional methods of going out necessarily, I think, and if you guys are going door to door or anything like that, but yeah.
Right.
That was a lot of questions wrapped into one question.
Background, how did you decide to run? What does campaign look like?
Also, just like, what's up? How's it going?
Yeah, what's up? How's it going? So yeah, so my name is David. I am currently an immigration attorney. I live here in CD 34. I moved to Los Angeles in 2010. I've lived here for the past 10 years. When I graduated from law school, I started working at the DA's office at LA County. And then the county went on a hiring freeze. And so okay. I started working in labor and employment litigation on the plaintiff side. So I would sue employers for unpaid wages, sexual harassment, those types of cases. And shortly thereafter, I then moved into the entertainment industry because I felt that there was a need, as a lot of my friends at the time who were, and even now, I mean, there's a lot less now, but back then there were a lot of writer friends, director friends, acting friends, just being charged so much with excessive high attorney fees.
Yeah.
And so they would be paying several thousand dollars in retainers, then get charged a percentage, and then be afraid to talk to them on the phone. Mm-hmm. So they would ask me for help. And I'm a labor and employment. I mean, although there are overlapping areas, I found myself doing a lot of their legal counsel work for free, which is fine for me in helping them. But it's like, why are you afraid to talk to your $1,000 an hour attorneys? Like, you should be demanding them to do stuff for you. But obviously they can't because of the money and everything involved with that. So I felt that there was a need there. So I created thehollywoodlawyer.com in 2014, October, just to fill in the need for, hey, we can't be taking money and taking advantage of our creatives because they gave up everything to do creative stuff for us, to be the thought provokers, to be the thought creators, and we can't be taking advantage of that. And so I saw a need for creating affordable legal services for a creative niche services. And at the time, you really couldn't get an attorney just to look over a contract before you had to sign it 3 days later or the next day. You had to have paid a $2,000 retainer first and then book them on appointment. And so it was very inaccessible for a lot of creatives. And so we filled that void of creating flat fee services, of providing very affordable flat fee rates, contingency rates, and just kind of on the go things that you can just really need, whether it be, hey, I need a red line written review of all the things that need to be changed in my contract. Can you give me that in the next 48 hours? Yes, we can. We'll help you. Do you want an oral consultation on top of that? Okay, let's do it. So it was making these services more affordable and more accessible because a lot of our creatives are being taken advantage of, signing away their rights, signing away their options without getting any value for that. And so we did that, or I did that for about 4 or 5 years. I sold The Hollywood Lawyer. At the time, there wasn't any type of legal practice that was like ours. And so now you have counsel for creators and all of these other smaller legal practices that are providing those services. And so I felt, okay, I think I've reached my time here in the industry. So to be honest, I kind of wanted to see what it was like to be on the other side. So I applied to Sony Pictures to be one of its legal counsels. I ended up, after so many interviews, I ended up getting a job there, director of music acquisitions for legal. I spent my 9 months there. If I had stayed, several more years, I could probably now start to pay off my $200,000 in law school loans that I haven't been able to pay off for all these years because I've worked that daily grind and hustle life of working 2 to 3 jobs. I remember there were so many days where I'd work free as an attorney and then drive for Lyft and Uber from 7 p.m. to 3 a.m. every day. And so now it was like, yes, David, like a sane mind would tell you to just stay at Sony, don't quit your job and just pay off your law school loans and do it. But in the reality of my neighborhood and where I live, the average rent here for a 1-bedroom apartment is $2,000 a month, but the per capita income is $15,000. Yep. And so when you have families living 2 to a bedroom apartment, it's like, okay, I felt like I was living in 2 completely different worlds, And it was just this overall realization. And this had started building up ever since I had helped out on Kenneth Mejia's campaign in 2018. Mm-hmm. So that's where I was really activized politically because I had missed the 2016 Bernie Our Revolution moment. And so during all of this time and these deeper realizations, I thought, holy shit, like life isn't supposed to be this hard or tough for anybody. Yeah. Like the struggle shouldn't be this real. Like what's going on? Like we shouldn't be working for all of our lives until the last day that we breathe. Like that's not what life is supposed to be like. And so it hit me on a deeper level And during all of this time, while doing The Hollywood Lawyer, while working at Sony, I was also a local neighborhood council board member of MacArthur Park Neighborhood Council. Although it could have a lot more power, it's at least something that we as the community members, as residents, can hold on to. Yeah, I wish the neighborhood council system could do a lot more. And so for those who are listening, Los Angeles has 99 neighborhood councils, and each neighborhood council serves 40,000 residents. And so what we have the power to do is to give our opinion on any zoning projects that come in, and so in a way we're able to stop gentrification as much as possible so that our community members aren't displaced. And so the neighborhood council system allows us to actually have a say to cling on to whatever status quo is, although we're not fond of status quo. At least this is what we know, mm-hmm. because we don't know if something worse is going to come, because we've seen our families and neighbors move an hour, 2 hours away, leaving Los Angeles. And that's not the city that we need to become, because if we really prioritize the people and find solutions that actually work, then we can all still be intact, still keep our community safe. But it's a matter of what are our community's needs and concerns. And right now, our communities are so financially distressed. We have a 35 plus year income wage stagnation, ever increasing widening wealth gap. We have people that pre-COVID-19 had 2 to 3 jobs to make ends meet. Mm-hmm. And currently they have no jobs to make ends meet. They have no health insurance. And yet our elected officials continue to preach this message of, oh, universal health care. Oh, now we're going to take it out. Oh, yeah, our DNC platform just voted to not prioritize Medicare for all anymore because we're not in that moment anymore. When we're all more ever in that moment because nobody has health insurance.
Yeah, totally.
And so when you see like these elected officials just preaching, oh, we'll give you Medicare for all or healthcare for all, but then they're taking money from pharmaceutical companies, healthcare companies. They're saying free education for all, but then they're taking money from student debt collectors. In a way, it's like, how crazy are we to continue re-electing the same officials
right.
2 years after 2 years Absolutely. After 2 years? It's like, I think it's on us now to realize, and it's not in a accusatory or judgmental way, but it's more of a, hey, like, they actually work for us. And it's kind of really waking up and bringing out that true perspective of they actually work for us. Mm-hmm. And if their job is to represent the will of the people and they're not doing it, all right, let's vote for somebody else. And so that's why I'm running. Yeah,
which is actually very interesting in terms of the trajectory of your career that you've just laid out, because it's exactly what you were doing with Hollywood. I mean, these lawyers that you're talking about, that people were afraid to, you know, push back on the money issues and all of that stuff. Well, they're supposed to work for people, but the system is broken. Mm-hmm. Or you may, I guess that's the system is designed, how it's designed to work, but like, you know, showing an alternative path. And everything you're saying really resonates with me. I've been talking about this a lot with people in my conversations. You know, it's easy to say, to fall into this us versus them mentality, left versus right. And sure, I've got lots of complaints about the right, but also we need to step up. We need to be accountable. We need to try harder and keep pushing for officials that actually work for us, as you're saying, because just saying get the Democrat in isn't cutting it. The Democrats, so many Democrats, the system, the establishment is serving the same systems that aren't working, you know, and they're ingrained. So that's why I'm so thrilled to have candidates like you stepping up and talking about some really dramatic, drastic things that need to happen to actually be serving the communities. You're running on a very progressive platform, which is very exciting to us. You've been endorsed by Andrew Yang and Marianne Williamson, am I right?
Correct.
You're a supporter of UBI, Medicare for All, Green New Deal, a homes guarantee. And I'd love to have you walk us through some of these issues and talk about how you arrived on these positions and everything. I guess we could start with UBI. It's not a new concept, but it's relatively new to many Americans, I think. You know, Andrew Yang's campaign brought it to the forefront of our conversations this election cycle. And of course, he exited the race before the pandemic hit. But now I think we're having these conversations under a new lens. You know, many people have been pushing for UBI as something as a response to the pandemic, and what we got was far short of a UBI.
Far short.
You know, but now more than ever, something like this is imperative.
And when Andrew brought that up during his campaign, people laughed at him, and now everybody's like, what about that?
Yeah. But could you? I mean, I think a lot of our listeners have a fairly good grasp on UBI, but I'd love to have you walk us through it. I'm hoping that we all can have a takeaway of easy ways that we can talk about it with our relatives and loved ones, you know, moving forward, destigmatizing things in a way is totally an important part of this conversation. But yeah, love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much for asking that question, Katie. Universal basic income is probably one of the most progressive things out there.
Yeah.
And so for people to suddenly now catch on, it's like, oh, and it's a good thing, because it's not like why didn't you catch on sooner? No, I'm glad and happy that that you caught on.
I liked UBI before it was cool kind of stuff.
Yeah. No, exactly. So it's like, why do we even have to go there? Like, I'm glad that you know about it now. Mm. And so let's talk about ways that we can implement it. But pulling back just for a sec before I go back into there,
yes.
For our platform, we're focused really on empowering the American people and our communities again, mm-hmm. because the focus has not been on our people the past 30, 40 years. And so for us, it's like, okay, so David, what does putting the focus on the people look like? And it's very basic elements of, do our people have access to good food? Can they eat good food? Like,
yeah.
Can they have it? Like, is it hard to get it? Like, do they have access to good healthcare and education? Do they have a room to sleep in with a roof over their head? Are they able to pay for basic expenses? And these are the very basic things. Mm-hmm. And in ensuring, because if a government is one that is of the people, for the people, and by the people, then it should be taking care of the people. It's not it's not some radical socialist or whatever crazy idea you want to put on it. It's a very basic, practical result of what a government, a representative government, is supposed to be. And if we're paying our tax and money into the system and we're not seeing this, then we can demand for something else. And so now going back into the UBI part, so the UBI part takes care of the basic expenses. But I think beyond that, what it really represents is it starts addressing this 30, 40 plus year income wage stagnation that's been happening, mm-hmm. this widening wealth gap, even before going to automation, mm-hmm. which is probably an equally important area and reason. But even before that, our people are financially distressed and depressed right now. And that affects them not just in their finances, mentally, emotionally as well.
Yes, yes.
And it contributes to more unrest, ease. And I come from a child, and I'm not going to say I come from as a child from domestic violence. And my parents fought mostly because of money. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we're putting this strain onto our families and our communities and saying, you deal with it, without giving them bootstraps or boots even, is the biggest evil that we could be doing, is the biggest evil that they could be doing to us. And I think it's really our time to wake up and realize, holy shit, like, yeah, we're talking about it, but it just doesn't end here at talking, where it goes a lot further. And so what a UBI would really do, I mean, for those who also aren't aware of UBI, another good reason is for automation, because we see a lot of our jobs being automated, especially during now in COVID-19, because there are a lot of people who are afraid to go ahead and risk their health and going out and working. A lot of restaurants, I forgot what restaurant, they were showing a video on CNN of how they have robot cooks now. And they were cooking the food. And so I'll send you that link when I see it, but it's just, it's in the sense of everything is being automated to the point of, like, if you go to the warehouses in Amazon, or if you go, like, you'll see automation in your face happening. And even for my legal industry, I know that the co-founders of LegalZoom, they've created something else that will now be displacing even more attorneys, and I get that we have this automatic bias against attorneys. But for those who graduate in recent years where the legal economy was shit, like, they still have $200,000 in loans,
right,
that, and they're unable to pay it. So I think there's a different time and era for these occupations. And even with that, like with law schools pumping in students and pumping out, and there's so many areas that we can start tackling and addressing in terms of what are we doing and why are we not being efficient in all of these ways. So the idea of UBI is to help kind of buffer the different changes that could happen when automation occurs. So that's the second reason. But on an overall scale, UBI, imagine practically what it would do to an area in our district where the per capita income is $12,000 to $15,000. Having a UBI of even $1,000 a month would double their income.
Yes. Yes.
Would be able to increase their ability to not be strapped and chained to their minimum wage jobs that they hate or whatever other jobs with conditions that they don't prefer. And it would allow them to have the flexibility and freedom and breathing room to actually breathe now and to consciously make choices, because we're always making these choices in our reactive parasympathetic state, being all in this fight, flight, or freeze mode because of the conditions that we've created our people to live in. And so if we were able to give our people some breathing space where now they have the ability to go ahead and take a class, to go ahead and transition into a different career, or go ahead and be able to work for a job that's part-time and still have the finances to be able to still pay for their basic expenses. And there's the fungibility aspect, what you, Katie, referenced earlier, is one of the big keys, not just in terms of stigma, but in terms of we as the people, we know best what we need our money for. And yes, I'm grateful our family lived on safety net programs, but like my food assistance isn't going to help me with paying my rent.
Right.
There are times that the food assistance, like, it'll be so handy and so helpful, but there are times where I could be using assistance elsewhere. And so why add all of the bureaucratic tape, the extra government in between, the extra means testing and hurdles to prove that I don't have money to pay rent or put food on the table?
Right.
Why do we do that extra unnecessary pain and suffering to our people and then to ourselves on our bandwidth wise when we could actually putting our focus on other things in terms of creating an infrastructure for our people, making sure that every community is taken care of? Like, this is where we could actually be spending more of our time in. And so for me, I think what got me to go into the entertainment industry and I saw that need, and what got me to go here, was there are so many things and areas that we could be cleaning up right now on just a practical level, even putting party politics aside. Like, it doesn't make sense that we continue in our imperialistic conquests around the world. Although some might not think, oh, David, didn't imperialism end like a while ago? No, we're still living it out. And there's no need for us to be pouring money into this. And that even in and of itself isn't a party politics thing. Everyone's doing it, whether you're Republican or Democrat. And so it's rethinking, what are we doing as a government and how are we holding our officials accountable? And so what I'm very grateful, despite what people may think of Bernie and, oh, he's traded or whatnot, I'm still super grateful that he let us out of our birdcage. I'm grateful that Andrew did too, Marianne, Tulsi, all of these people did. I'm grateful that AOC's in office, Ilhan Omar's in office, Rashida is in office. Sorry that I'm saying by their first name. They're just...
No,
Ayanna Pressley's in office. But these people are what help us, are the people that empower us to become our own true and powerful selves and enable us to walk out more in our truth and freedom, where now we have not just people. And a year ago, I never would have thought I'd be running for office right now, but I am. But it's breaking that whole stereotype of, oh, there's a certain image that only runs for office. But no, a representative government looks like one that is made up of from people from all different kinds of backgrounds, occupations, and facets of life. And that's what we need to move towards. Yeah. And how do we get there? And so that's the thing that we need to be doing. I told my boyfriend, hey, babe, once we reach the 6-year mark, you're like, you're pulling me out and yank me out, because I'm just in and out. Like, I really just want to see change and help spark that. So
that's a really important point there. I mean, there's so much to unpack on what you just said, but touching on that first, we need people that come in and serve their time and you know, bring ideas. And we also need people to not grow old in office and to get stuck in the same
and
spot
get used
that
to having
were.
Power over people and society. It's like that, power corrupts, but not me. Not I, like, what happened to me, right?
Right.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together. Oh.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
With UBI, I mean, yeah, like I said, so many things that you mentioned that really stand out to me. The first one being what you suggested, like, your background or people having different sorts of issues at home that on the surface seem unrelated to money, but it can all be traced back to money. And I think people are palpably feeling this right now as tensions are high and they're feeling their own mental health, their stability, emotional well-being being frayed as they're trying to figure out how to make ends meet. And the other thing about UBI, and look, I will admittedly say that I've been interested in UBI for a long time. And when we started having these conversations, as exciting as it was, it felt daunting. It felt like a daunting task to tackle at this point in time. But at the same time, you know, you look at Bernie Sanders, Medicare for all. A while back wasn't something that people considered a possibility, and now it is. You start talking about it, you start destigmatizing it, and you start planting the seeds that this is actually not only a possibility but a necessity, and changing the general perception. In this pandemic, one thing has exposed all the cracks in this foundation. And the other thing that I thought of as you were talking is just the basic concept that our world is changing. And with all this turmoil, you have a loss of freedom to think outside the box. you know, you're in this grind of trying to make ends meet. Well, then how are people going to come up with the next big idea? How do we free ourselves to continue to expand and solve the problems that we're facing? Because we've got a lot of them. And UBI feels like a very good start for laying that foundation and fixing our foundation. And it's possible. I don't know how you go about making it happen, but it is possible. We've been giving out all this money to the wrong people during this pandemic when they could have authorized something that is a monthly payment to people to make ends meet, to say that you're supported, that, you know, we're protecting you during this time, and not sending billions of dollars to, you know, huge corporations and lawmakers.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Or the Pentagon.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the Pentagon. Yeah. They allocated more funding for fighter jets.
Oh my God.
That's called relief. That's COVID relief right there. More fighter jets that we don't need.
Yeah. And you make a very great point about that, Katie. During a time where people don't have money to buy food or pay rent, like, you should give the people money, direct cash relief right now. Whether that looked like $2,000 a month during the pandemic and then after it $1,000 a month, because everybody will still be recuperating. And that's the way to get money into the hands of people the fastest, because once you do a whole means tested and go through all of these departments, like, people still haven't gotten their one-time stimulus check from last time. And it's this lack of realization or deliberate ignorance and pushing away or not. I guess ignorance can't be deliberate. It could be. Ignorance could be deliberate.
I think it can.
Feigned ignorance, yeah.
But pushing away the fact the fact that our people are the economy. We are the economy.
Yes.
If we don't have money, there's no economy. Like, nothing will be running. And so the government, they have their own separate economy, which is the war industry, military industrial complex economy that they're doing. But it's a matter of realizing, like, we the people do matter on a collectively on our own scale as well. But then on the government side, realizing, holy shit, like, we need a conscience check here. Like, and I hate to I'm not bringing any religion into it, but there needs to be some sort of spiritual or emotional or a revolution in our conscious that needs to happen in DC right now. And that's what Marianne kept on driving on, of we need to have a revival of actually humanity and self. And that's where Andrew Yang brought his whole humanity first element. And that's what a lot of these candidates had in mind, was we need to remember the human race. Like, we need to help each other right now. I'm getting passionate, so I'm lifting my hand up.
gesticulating in
He's doing the politician good way.
So in a way, like, and it seems crazy at first, because when I remember when I heard UBI for the first time, I thought, what? Are you serious? Nah, come on. Like, I know, like, you're Asian and you're saying that you do the math and all of it, but because I hadn't heard about UBI until first learning about Andrew, which was a while before the debates, a lot before that. And once I started going down the rabbit hole, I found, holy crap, Martin Luther King Jr. was preaching about this in his last book, Speaking Tour, Where Do We Go From Here, around 1968, 1969, when he was assassinated. And that was one of the things he was proposing. He was saying, we do all of these great things to help the poor and to eradicate poverty, and we do all of these programs and implementations, but when it comes to implementation of it all, we solve everything else first, and then we come down last to poverty, and it's never solved, and it's always unaddressed. And he says the only way we can do it with is a basic income. And so he had fought for that. It passed in the House, didn't pass in the Senate, and that happened twice. I think it was 1971 and another year.
Wow.
And so this has happened throughout history. Thomas Paine, one of our four founding fathers, supported it. He thought it was absurd that a human being could own land, let alone an American, because even before we came over, the first Americans came over from Great Britain and from other countries, the Native Americans were there, and they were there too. But then before them, the land was already there. And so it was this idea of nobody can own land. And so he was proposing creating a land endowment tax fund, into which those over a certain age would pay a land tax, and from there basic income would be distributed. Unfortunately, that didn't pass. But there's been movements along the way in history, and similarly, although it's not it's different types of right. We have the civil rights movement, the women's movement, and different movements and suffrage movements along the way. But now is a time where we're in that process where it's another revolution, another change, another big series of change that's about to happen. And right now we need to realize, holy crap, like we've come this far and we need to continue more because we do see it building before our eyes. I don't know if you are aware, there's a party that just formed, it's called For a People's Party, and they're really trying to get on the ball and get rolling by 2022. And we have probably a record number of down ballot congressional candidates running across the nation for their primary races this election cycle. We have many more forming chapters and groups in the offspurs of the organizations that Bernie started with Our Revolution, that Andrew started with Humanity Forward, etc. And so we're now slowly building a movement that can only grow bigger. So for us right now, it's an exciting time, but it's also a very serious time where we can't lose focus, where we can't compromise. Like, we can't compromise by continuing to fund a $740 billion plus dollar Pentagon military budget anymore. We can't compromise in these things, but it's a matter of then how do we go about doing it? Like, and this is where we need to come and have a deeper conversation with those in our communities and those in DC, where we're actually talking with our communities first and saying, hey, what are your basic concerns and needs right now? Okay, how would you like that to be responded to? What would help you out the most right now? What would help you thrive? Taking that and then articulating that back into legislation in DC. Absolutely. And that's the process that should be happening instead of they're legislating amongst themselves, then coming back to our communities with the crumbs that they have and saying, hey, look what we got for you. And so this whole mindset, just everything needs to change. But what's the answer, David? What should we do? And it's us realizing collectively, like, that we have the power. We are the revolution, no matter how much of a cliche it might sound. Like, we are the fucking revolution. We are the economy. As long as we say that we matter and take action individually and collectively, we could be so powerful, powerful. So
yes, it's that realization.
We forget that, and they want us to forget that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they control us through poverty. That's why they don't want to give us basic income. That's why they don't want to give us another. That's why they want to means test that stimulus check even more. Why they want to cut off the percentage of the expanded unemployment benefits. Just so on and so forth. They control us through poverty.
Saying stuff like, you know, people aren't returning to work because they're getting so much more money on unemployment, instead of acknowledging the fact that we're in the middle of a pandemic. Also, excuse me, they're getting paid not that much money people aren't getting that much money on unemployment.
Yeah.
Let's just accept that. And why? So some people might be making more money on their unemployment than at their job. That's a problem. Why is that okay?
Exactly.
I mean, like, and so using that as a way to stigmatize people who are receiving money from the government to, you know, cover costs of living is ghoulish to me. You know, and you, like, back to your point earlier about, like, okay, so assistance to help with food, that's great, but, like, I need it for rent, and why do I have to jump through all this red tape to justify how I need to spend money to, you know, to live anyway?
Yeah.
Gets me frustrated. Sorry, Cody, you had something you wanted to say, and I just kind of bowled right
through. Oh, no, that's fine. You're very, very passionate. I mean, there's just so much to talk about this and, like, what our America's very skewed idea of what freedom is and, like, rugged individuality and the fact, like, ignoring the fact that we are really all in this together and we are you judge a society by how they treat their poor, and, like, if you lift up everybody that's the poorest, then everybody above them will be lifted up as well.
Yeah.
One of my things about UBI actually is, this was more, I think maybe more of a communication, issue on Yang's part, at least, if you're giving, so like you're giving money, like let's say $2,000 a month to everybody. If we live in a society where, if you add up like rent and food and heat and like all the, like the basic needs, you know, we have a hierarchy of needs that we all kind of understand, like, well, food and water, shelter, those kinds of things. But if you can't, if you can't pay for all of those things in a month with the $2,000, then the UBI seems more like, kind of like a band-aid, like, okay, well, we'll give you some money, And I guess I'm wondering if there's any sort of, I guess you, to me, UBI requires looking at other aspects of society to bring those costs down too. So that if I were to give somebody $2,000 a month, they can pay their rent, they can buy food, they can do all the things that, are required to survive as a human being with that $2,000. If that were to happen. So I guess, I'm just wondering if you have any, thoughts about that.
No, those are very great points, and I am not a believer that one solution will solve everything, because while, and that's why our platform is really addresses each of those needs. So for having a roof, room and a roof to sleep under, a homes guarantee, for paying your basic expenses, universal basic income, for healthcare, Medicare for all, for education, free education and vocational schools, and cancellation of student debt. So for us, it's realizing a UBI is not going to immediately solve all of your financial needs for the month. But even right now, or pre-COVID-19, we had 70% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck each month, most not having savings more than $300 to $400. And imagine what kind of relief that would do for our people on a emotional, on a mental level, first of all. On that level. And then it's also attacking all of those areas you mentioned. Why do we have astronomical pharmaceutical costs and healthcare costs? Like, that's crazy. It's because we have executives making billions and trillions off of us. That's why. That's where the money's going.
Yeah. And who are they, like, giving their money to?
Like, right? Where do you get the money? It's like, you take it from them. It's plain and simple. Yeah. These corporate interests that have become the main constituents of our elected officials. And they're not. They're not. They're corporate entities. They're not human beings. But suddenly they've become constituents of our elected officials. So it's changing that, changing how we go ahead and do everything else with housing. For instance, we have over $70 billion in federal public housing that needs improvements right now, and nothing's being done with that. We have pay-to-play schemes in so many cities across the nation, in even our... probably a lot of us, our own federal elected officials, are engaging in those too. And so it's this turning a blind eye to corruption in your face is also a thing that drives all of our housing costs up, the gentrification of it all. And so it's realizing while we go ahead and supply all of these needs, we also need to have a responsibility and a justice element to it. And so that's where our campaign platform comes in. So instead of naming our committee Paid For by David Kim for Congress, one of the things I've learned growing up is a name really gives you a lot of power and identity, per my mom and what my dad told me. And so the name of our campaign committee, it's pretty long. It's Paid For by David Kim for Congress, Financial Freedom, the financial freedom part, empowering our people. Love, what does love look like from an elected official? Love looks like taking care of and caring for your people, spending less of your money creating these regime change endless wars abroad, and taking that money and caring for your people. And then justice for all. We need justice to ensure that everyone continues to be treated equally and fairly and have that access. So what does that look like? That means banning corporate money from elections. We need to wash out all corporate money from elections. It doesn't make sense that you get elected to office because you have the most corporate donors behind your campaign war chest and fund you to office. And even though you've knocked less doors than your challengers combined, or individually, even though you've called and talked to less constituents than any of your challengers. And so it's a matter of this morale revolution that needs to happen on the justice side, not just in the government, but now everything that we're also doing, because actions speak louder than words. Why are we militarizing our police? Why are we invading the rights of our own people by allowing espionage rights against our own people through the BS and excuse of, oh no, it's for foreign power and foreign national security. But then why are you doing that to your own people?
Yeah.
And why are we oppressing our communities? And so it's this accountability aspect of our platform, which is the justice aspect of, no, it doesn't make sense that more than 2/3 of the people that are incarcerated are Black and brown people. It doesn't make sense that more than 2/3 of the people living in federal public housing currently, and we're completely neglecting the $70 billion in improvements that need to be made, 2/3 of them are Black and brown. Mm-hmm. So, like, we see institutionalized racism before our eyes, but we're not doing anything about it. We see this blatant war against poverty, but we're not doing about it. And so now it's time for us, for people to really stand up to identify it and just call it out. But obviously media won't shine a light on those people. And so I'm super thankful that Katie and you all offered me this time to be on your platform.
Oh, God.
Because
we'd love
this is the one
here.
Of the ways yeah. that we can share with other people in yeah. expanding that knowledge. Because the main media won't do it.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode. And I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So,
so all of this seems to go along with yet another part of your website that I was really compelled by, which is the human-centered economy. You know, this adjusting of how we think about the economy, and I loved that. Are there more things you want to speak to that specific point? I mean, I do think that we've been talking about it this whole time. It's all hand in hand, but I love that phrasing too. I mean, these bullet points: human beings are more significant than money.
In a past life, mm-hmm. I was working in human resources. When I would interview for jobs right out of college, I'd be like, I want to put the human back in human resources. Mm-hmm.
For you, I did think that you meant a past life at first. And I was like, this will be interesting.
Was he going there?
I was like, were you a human being? Or
I was like, okay, I'll go for this ride. I had a psychic once told me that I was a dolphin in a past life.
Yes,
and
you were.
I died in the ocean, and that's why I don't like the ocean that much. Yeah.
I do think you were a dolphin in a past life. I'm just going to put that
possible out
there. It does fit.
David, you also – oh, no, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say dolphins are so cute. I wish I can. Anyhow, I want to go see a dolphin soon. But...
Well, here I am. You yes. touched on the Holmes Guarantee, which is another thing I wanted to talk yeah. about.
Yeah.
On your website, you started this section by saying we need to pass H.R. 4351 and S. 1919, which is the YIMBY Act. I want to hear about the Holmes Guarantee, but I also would love it if you could explain that a little bit to us.
Yeah, for sure. Before I get to that, the human-centered economy, it's just basically the idea of if we are supposed to be a government that prioritizes and puts the people first and do all of these things with universal basic income, Medicare for all, etc., then that's great. But then how do we ensure that we actually have gauges, good identifiers to make sure that we're doing that on the track? We don't need measures like GDP of measuring whether or not our country's in a good state. Our GDP and stock market went up. Like
stocks are
up. Pandemic.
We're doing great. We're actually doing great because the stocks are up.
Exactly. So how in the world is that a good gauge and indicator of where our country is when most of every one of us are frightened and uncertain and not knowing what's going to happen or how they're going to pay their bills and their rent? Like, that's not a good indicator of where we're at. So we actually need a job performance evaluation that makes sense. And so that job performance evaluation of how our government and country is doing isn't based on the stock market or GDP. It should be based on how our people are doing. So what does that mean? What does that look like? If we're really prioritizing our people, then our people should be doing well. So what are the factors we should look out for? Like long life expectancy, health, like where marriage, like in all of these different ways, if we're able to put the focus on our people in terms of making a focus on job skills training, on employment, on mental, emotional health care, on taking care of our families, because every family is a war zone now, because we're putting the financial strain on all of our families and we're driving our parents so emotionally and mentally burdened. Now they're not able to kind of coincide or coexist with their emotions. And so where does that seep to? That seeps to
how do you parent?
Yep. And to parents as well, and amongst themselves. And it creates, and so that's why our platform also has free, I know a lot of people might think, oh, how are you going to do that? We have money for it. How in the world did we just print 3 extra trillion new dollars and put that into currency? And so it's a matter of realizing, no, that we matter. And so for our platform, we're including free marriage counseling, free family counseling for Love all, it. Because a lot of us, majority of us, like, believe it or not, some of us, like, we're always operating in our parasympathetic state in this fright, flight, or freeze mode when we should actually be operating from our sympathetic state, from a very deep conscious awareness and responsive state where we're able to really be healed from all of the trauma that's been going on in all of us. And so it's ensuring that our people are not just financially okay, not just physically okay, but that they're mentally and emotionally okay as well. And so these are the gauges that should be in place for a human-centered economy. Going now to Holmes Guarantee.
You are amazing. Thank you. You've got everything, all of these balls that you're juggling right now. But yes, love but that. Holmes Guarantee is great.
Holmes Guarantee, the bills that you referenced, they're the YIMBY bills. So basically, they're about removing exclusionary zoning policies, building residential housing, multi-dwelling units in place that were not originally zoned out for that, building multi-dwelling accessory units, increasing housing in areas that we can see more housing, and not putting these arbitrary exclusionary zoning laws and land speculation that occurs where the price of our land just keeps on going up and there's nobody using that land or the buildings on it. And so it's getting rid of that. That's a basic. So now what we need to do on top of that is called FIMBY. So we have NIMBY, not in my backyard yet, YIMBY, yes, in my backyard. And then FIMBY is public housing in my backyard. Yeah. So it's a matter of, so what the Holmes Guarantee is about is providing a set of basic tenants' rights for everybody. Because if you think about it, what's the majority of your income going towards, Katie, Sophie, Cody?
Rent.
Rent. It's the number one thing that we're paying. But our government is not doing, like, when Biden first came out with his task forces several months ago, he had nothing on housing. And I was like, are you in touch with the people right now?
No,
like,
is the answer.
What in the world? No. It's like, what the one of the biggest things that we pay from our monthly income is rent. We should be having a conversation around this. And why is it that out of 41 million renting households in the nation, Over 20 million of them are paying more than a third of their income. Why is it that out of the 40 plus million, 12 plus million of them are paying more than half of their income? Mm-hmm. Like, why is that? So these are the things we need to talk about. So it's establishing guidance and laws, and it's for the majority of our people, tenants, not to be taken advantage of, because mm-hmm. that's not right on moral and practical level. And number two, improving, making expenditures towards the $70 billion in federal public housing improvements that need to be made. That's institutionalized racism right there. And it's also for Los Angeles, and particularly for those who aren't aware, we have less than 10,000 public housing units. This is very small compared to other cities and counties where they have 200, a couple, a few hundred thousand units in public housing. And the reason why is back in the 50s, we had a group that was specifically formed to stamp out all public housing because they wanted Los Angeles to be have a nice landscape to rich people and to live out that Hollywood uh-huh. life and picture. And so we don't have public housing, but yet our people, we're, that's why our district is the 10th poorest district in the nation. And we continue to be because, I mean, we continue to go downward because we're completely being neglected. We're neglecting our people where they need it the most, and that's housing. What has our people, what have our city elected officials done with the money that we've passed a few billion dollars towards building housing and towards homelessness yes. and eradicating it? They spent $700,000 a unit. I think they built a couple units, not even. And so it's a matter of, wow, like we could be doing so much for our people right now. And so another main component of Homes Guarantee is this idea of creating 12 million social housing units, just like in Europe, where, and the 12 million number is based on those experiencing homelessness in our country. And so it's building at least 12 million social housing units where people won't have to pay more than a third of their income. Well, there will be program and policies in place. And so it's allowing for those, that shortage now to be addressed on a big radical change yeah. scale. And so this is, these are the types of change that we really need right now, a second FDR
yeah.
Type of era.
I'm sure I've mentioned this on one of our podcasts at some point, but especially like when you were talking about the YIMBY Act, I mean, so much of what you've said resonates with me. My father has worked in nonprofits. He's retired now, but he was running a rehabilitation facility in Northern California, and by that, because of that, was you know on different council boards and stuff, to talk about homelessness and different things. And in Half Moon Bay, for example, there was this big tract of land, and people were, they had a developer or somebody that had a plan for how to quickly build public housing, something they wanted to do. But the hurdle was zoning. The hurdle was getting permission from the city, and it never happened. Because there was no incentive, or there was no, like, it was just too much red tape, too many things. And it's like, we have the land, you have the resources, you have somebody willing to do it. And they couldn't pull it together. And that, I'm sure there's more details that I'm missing from this story, but it's so inherently frustrating and wrong. And for years we've been watching in California, in Los Angeles, in San Francisco, the homeless, the unhoused population explode because of all of the stuff that we've been talking about today. And I see this happening, and people can just walk past it. They don't want to have homelessness, you know, a blight on the community. They don't want this lower income stuff. Well, now it's something that you can't ignore. It makes it feel like, you know, 200 years ago, or, you know, you just can't ignore the fact that this is a crisis and it's at our doorsteps, and we shouldn't be ignoring it. This needs to be a huge priority for all of us. And it goes back to everything that we've been saying before. We want our economy to boom. Well, we need to have people taken care of and have access to basic resources to live their life, to make money, to spend money. And yes, so.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
you're right out of steam there, but yeah.
No, you're so right. And it's this, we've put our communities in such a paralysis state where now we have so many unhoused neighbors and people we know where we also want to help, and that's why we have mutual aid networks in Los Angeles and other groups that help help out like K-Town for All and Streetwatch and a lot of great groups. But there comes a certain point too, because we are also using our own resources to give, the limited resources that our government allows for. And so it's become such a serious point now where, like, people are dying. Like, people are literally dying. Why aren't you commandeering hotels to house our unhoused neighbors right now when they need a place to stay right now, especially during a pandemic? Why is that not being the first thing being done right now out of any elected official's conscious heart and mind? Why is that not the first thing? And it's because they see, they only see numbers, they only see money, they only see popularity, they only see career job stability to continue to be reelected, because they don't know anything else besides the six-digit salary that they're getting. So they're going to do all that they can to hold on to that job and position. They're going to do all that they can to continue taking the corporate money that will give them the emotional security and financial security that everything will be okay, even though the people are suffering. And they don't even view the people as human beings. We're all viewed, let alone viewing our unhoused brothers and sisters as ghosts. They're viewing, now they're starting to view masses of people as just ghosts and just as subjects in a way, as just another number, when we're actually all human beings and not one of us is less than another, not one soul. And so it's this moral revolution that really needs to happen on such a deep, deep level.
And I'm sure there's an element of not seeing them as voters, you know, seeing people that don't have a mailing address as somebody that they need to reach out to for support.
Yeah. The disenfranchisement is the disenfranchisement is crazy in the sense of whether it be those of our family, neighbors, brothers and sisters that are incarcerated, whether it be those that are living unhoused, whether it be those that are living as undocumented workers in our Latino communities, in our Korean communities, in our Thai communities, etc. They are being taxed without representation.
Yes.
That's tyranny. Los Angeles was built on the labor of our brown brothers and sisters. They don't have a voice right now. They don't have a say. But then what the Democratic Party and machine does in California is, because we're California and diverse, instead of putting instead of putting like older white people in office to go ahead and do what they want, they put people that look like the people in their communities to deceive them and say, hey, they're actually legislating on your behalf, but they're completely not.
Yep.
My opponent says he's all for the immigrant communities, but he's the one who voted to initially authorize and fund ICE. And it's like people don't really go deeper into who they're voting for. And they just think, oh, the person looks like our community, so we're going to vote for him. No, the Democrat. I didn't mean to turn this into a Democratic machine bashing moment.
No, that's 100% what I was about to do. So
thank you. That's what they're doing in California. They're finding little puppets to put into place to keep the people under control. Like, that's not right.
Yeah.
So
No. I'm thrilled that you brought this up, because the next thing I wanted to talk to you about was Jimmy Gomez. He's the Democratic incumbent currently holding the 34th district. I wanted you to talk a little bit about him and of your experience as running against a Democratic incumbent. Elucidate more about what you were just saying, essentially. What this has been like.
And I guess just to tag on just sort of your perception of dealing with like the Democratic Party in general, and if there's a sense of, you can get a sense of, like, everyone, like, there's a lot of frustration from the party when people show up to point out that they're not doing anything or enough, and that better things are possible, basically, is a message they're really shy about. You can get that sense in a lot of these races across the country where people are challenging incumbents for not doing the things that we need to do.
Yeah. One of the very good reasons for running for office and challenging an incumbent is to put off the message, hey, like, the people are holding you accountable, and if you continue not to do what the people want or what you've promised, then there's a possibility that you can be voted out of office. And so that public accountability is what helps our elected officials come closer to the needle, to closer to being aligned with why they were elected into office in the first place. Jimmy might have been a great, I have nothing personal against him. I've never met him. He might have been a great, perhaps an even greater leader or a leader with qualifications. And I don't even know what the qualifications are. I'm not saying that there are certain qualifications and I fit that, but he probably wasn't even 10 times, 100 times potential as a greater leader than I was when he started. But right now where he's at, like, it's completely gone. There's no fuel left for the people because, and how do I know that? Because he continues to vote according to party politic interests. Yes, he's a self-alleged progressive. Yes, he's in the CPC, the Progressional Caucus. But what does that mean? Does that mean that he co-sponsors and supports Representative Ilhan Omar's rent cancellation, more rent and mortgage cancellation? Nah. What does that mean? That means he supports $100 billion rent relief fund that benefits landlords and that requires tenants to jump through hoops to prove that they don't have money to pay rent and put food on the table. He's for that. He's not for... he's for means-tested cash relief and not a universal basic income that could go straight to the pockets of people. There's multiple bills out there, whether it be Senator Kamala Harris's bill or Representative Rashida Tlaib, her ABC bill, which is $2,000 recurring monthly cash relief. He's not the type of person that's doing that, yet he's going around saying, I'm progressive. But what we've noticed now since March is he's actually... And if he's listening to this, I'm glad you're listening, but he's listening to our campaign now, because once we started doing a live stream for COVID-19 relief to our constituents, he started doing one. Once we started doing a text banking campaign, sending resources to our constituents on where to go if they're unable to pay rent, he started doing that. When we started doing AMAs on Instagram, he started doing that.
Interesting.
The other day I heard that he was very mad that this lefty progressive writer, podcaster Howie, he wrote an article about us and about our campaign, and he was very mad that he was saying that we were more progressive than he was. And so if that gets him to do his job, I'm glad and happy that he is. And so I was actually surprised that he voted yes to defund the Pentagon by 10% last week. And I was like, oh, good job, Jimmy. I'm so proud of you.
I mean, feel like you can certainly take some credit for that.
Well, because everything you've been saying up to this point has been like, oh, he saw our campaign and he is doing the aesthetic thing, or like the campaign thing. He's looking at your campaign to see what you're doing as a functioning campaign. Yeah. Not saying like, oh, I should also support Medicare for all. Oh, right. I should also support this. But that's actually kind of wild that he did vote.
Yeah. And I'm thankful that he did vote that way. And I give props to Jimmy. Jimmy, thank you for voting that way. But we're going to continue pushing him. I know that he was supporting the United States Postal Service. If that's the case, why did you take $25,000+ in money from UPS? A private competitor.
Oh, and wow.
So I retweeted that yesterday. I tweeted his tweet and retweeted, why are you taking money from UPS then? So it's just, I get that you want to make change and make it happen and show the people that you're really legislating for them. But do that not just in these single occurrence moments. Do that as a career. Do that as a daily lifestyle. Do that in your heart and intention, where it's always flowing in every interview that you have. Like, be that person instead of trying to act like that person. And so
it's also and reacting to the being challenged, right? It's that that Elliot Engel comment during the primary. He says, if there wasn't a primary, I wouldn't even care about this. Like, he literally said that out loud. Mm-hmm. And if you're only doing these things, if you're challenged, then maybe.
It also speaks to why a person decides to be in office. If you're just following what you're told from the establishment, then you want to be in office because you want power. You want to be in office because you like the status or whatever it is. And versus being in office because you want to help people, being in office because you want to make a difference. And I mean, I think that hearing you speak for this hour and hearing your background, it's clear that that's what your focus is, you know, from your time working in different capacities as a lawyer. You're like, it's not about money. I mean, sure, we all have to make money, but it's about helping people. And it's just vitally important that more people like you step up and the bare minimum, we're challenging the establishment. But we're also making significant strides in changing perception of things. And we're going to get more and more of us in office. And I think that that is such a positive, hopeful, inspiring thing to be focusing on right now and focusing our efforts. There's a lot of us that are disillusioned with this primary in terms of the presidential race. Fair, fine. But there are so many people like you all over this country that are stepping up and filling this void. And it's vital that we focus our attention on these kinds of races so that we can make the difference that we want. It's disappointing that we don't have Bernie or Yang, you know, leading the ticket right now, but there's so much progress that's still being made. And it's I think it's important for us right now, emotionally, spiritually, economically, to remember that.
You nailed it. You closed it very well,
Katie. Hey, thanks. They pay me the just fine bucks for that. Can you please tell our audience where they can find you online, how they can support you? I know I'm supporting you. I am 99% sure I am in your district. And I will be voting for you.
Yes.
But how can everybody else support you?
Yeah, thank you for asking, Katie. One of the biggest challenges for us is campaign finance. So obviously one of our top priorities is to reform campaign finance, where it's not corporate money that's deciding who gets elected, but it's where it's truly the people. So go check out our democracy dollars on davidkim2020.com to learn more about that. But as a grassroots candidate in a campaign, we are 100% people powered. So while our opponent has 98.8% of his donations being from corporate interests and big donors, and with a campaign war chest of $1 million, we don't have that much money. So if you're able to chip in, that's great. Go to davidkim2020.com/donate. But if you're unable to, that's totally fine. Please don't donate. Like, use your money for yourself. Like, buy food, pay, save it for rent, take care of yourself. And there's other ways you can help out, which is volunteering remotely through our text banking or phone banking volunteer programs. Or if it's even calling a friend or family member in Los Angeles, sharing our website link, sharing this interview, and saying, "Hey, you want more podcasts to add to your collection? Here's a great one. Worst year ever. Check out this episode." So do that. There's creative ways to help us in that sense. And so volunteer, donate, spread the word, and we'd be very grateful.
I definitely will be doing all of the above. If you've got those little lawn signs, I'll put them in my front yard.
Yes. Did you see me? Yes.
He grinned. Yes.
Really lit up.
David, thank you so much for joining this. This has been a delight. We will be following this closely and helping in any way that we can.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much for having me, Katie, Sophie,
of course.
And Cody.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
And that does it for us today on The Worst Year Ever. Please.
Now.
Go check out David's website. Support him in whatever way you can, if you can. You can check us out online, too, at Worst Year Pod on Instagram,
Ooh.
On Twitter.
Ooh.
You can follow us, too, if you want.
Ooh.
And all that stuff that's
it's
fun
true.
And good. It's true.
I could agree with you more, but I don't know what that would even mean.
He does not disagree with me completely, and that's what's important. Cool. We'll be back next week. Later.
Bye.
Everything's so dumb. Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I am the ferryman.
In the shadows of the afterlife, the ferryman of souls guides America's most influential spirits to their eternal rest.
Where are you taking me?
Are you death?
This road is not on any map.
How much for a ticket?
All I ask for in payment is a tail.
I don't know who got to Kennedy first.
And the devastation those first bombs caused.
I've never been to hell, but I know intimately the hymns of the damned.
Binge this season of The Passage now. Listen on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.